suitable for this, that had this outdoor patio where people could come and broadcast without actually, you know, entering and bothering the people living at the in the house and so on. We turned it, you know, we turned it into a radio station. We put out a thing for a technician, and out of the darkness came Ed Armstrong, and who taught radio in a couple of colleges and had private students in radio and so on, was technically a marvel, a whiz. And we were very concerned about having a clean operation, so that the one thing that we were afraid of was that the FCC was going to be able to say, well, you're trampling on other people's airspace and so on, and you're basically causing a common law injury, because people have, you know, people have paid for their licensed space and so on, and they're entitled to it. We didn't want a dirty operation, and that was Ed's first first commitment, was really not to, was to keep it clean, not to have people's other broadcasts interrupted.
You don't mean clean language, you mean no. Clean airspace.
No, I mean clean by, in the sense of not trespassing on other people's.
How big was the station? How many watts?
Well, we started out with a, let me see, what was it? Golly, I think it was really small, I think, to begin with. It was five, or maybe less. It's amazing what you can do with very little wattage. We ended up at, we had as much as 40 watts. People brought us in transmitters when we went to a lot of trouble, because you know you're not allowed to buy transmitters in this country. You know, just to know what a free country is all about, right? You can't buy, you can buy a kit. And you can buy a very small wattage kit, but it's very difficult. And what we had to do was to send to Canada. We had to establish an address in Canada, have the thing sent to Canada, paid for with Canadian funds, not laundered, and so, and then sent to us, you know, via. And that's how scared they are. They don't seem to be that scared, but they really are scared with people telling each other the truth on the air. And I figured this was this was the underlying, that people could disagree about where we want to put our energies in terms of what part of the front to struggle on, right? Some people want to deal with the homeless problem, other people want to deal with the racial problems and various kinds of economic and social and so on problems. Other people are Earth First and the Sea Shepherd. But I figured that what we need everywhere, first of all, because I know that all action is local, we have to have a way to mobilize communities against things like Malathion spraying, against things like, you know, putting a toxic waste dump in your neighborhood and so on. How do we mobilize? We don't have a means of mobilizing anything if we don't have a way of reaching into people's homes and talking to the people. If it's all going to be one-on-one, then, so I felt that this was the sine qua non of any kind of revolutionary action or you know, got to be careful about using those old time words.
Hey,
but
okay.
But
the Free Radio Santa Cruz.
But any action aimed at social change, right?
Now, did you in fact find yourself doing such things? I mean, what projects did you embark on to mobilize the community around? Around what issues did the station particularly find itself focusing on?
Well, what happened was the one rule that I was determined to have at Radio Free Venice, and was that it was going to be a First Amendment radio station. In other words, that there would be no views simply banned because they were wicked views, because they were evil views. If they were going to be demolished, they should be demolished in the arena of rational discussion and so on. And but once we got the station up, we basically opened it to the community. It was a matter of getting people to know that we were there. That was the first problem. I think that's a problem that you guys probably already, you know, that you face, is that you know, people have to know you're there in order to be able to listen. And also to contribute, because that was also a very, to me, that's perhaps more important than what's being transmitted, is what's being received and transmitted from the community. Because personally, I know that I have some ideas about things that need to happen and about actions that need to be taken, but I'm also sure that there's better ideas out there and that they're not being heard. So that was the whole idea behind it was that. Anyway, we opened it to the community. What actually happened was that very few people, we got a lot of young people who wanted to be disc, you know, wanted to play their music. And that was fine, as long as we didn't have a problem with the, I mean, there was absolutely no discrimination between, you know, this is good music and this is, I like this music and so on. But so it was a rather weird mixture because I was on for a couple of hours a week, I guess, maybe more than that.
Were you a 24-hour station?
No, we started out just in the evenings, and then we were able to extend that because as we produced programs, we transcribed them on the audio part of videotapes. And which meant that we had 6 hours, once you had a videotape thing, we had 6 hours of taped programming. So we used that a lot because, as I say, there was very little, and then we opened it to anybody who wanted to come, and that never even, toward the end, we were doing about 7 hours a day. Not toward the end, actually. You know, we got into 7 hours a day pretty quickly. Good deal of it was taped. Poets came and read their work. I imagine it's very much the same as here. And I did mainly the political thing, although I invited people to come all the time they didn't seem to do it very much. Most of the people were interested in music.
So you were pretty much the only person concerned with political issues, or were there others?
Well, as I say, mostly it was me and my guests. I mean, I used to have people on, as you have, it was, for instance, one very memorable night, we had some students from the Venice High School. And they came on, and they were wonderful. They advertised themselves. They were probably the best attended, best listened to program on the air. And I just let them go. And they went, apparently, to 3, 4. I mean, they played all night. They played. And in the course of the night, I got a call the next morning from Ed Armstrong, who was rather straight-laced. He was an odd character, but in some ways very, sort of a gun nut. And
he was one of your co-founders of the station?
He was the technician. And he took the name of Ed Armstrong because Ed Armstrong is apparently the guy who discovered or invented or whatever the FM band, you know, because he couldn't work under his own name, you know, because he would have been unlicensed like that. I mean, his being able to teach radio and all the rest of it by the FCC, and he was terrified of that. We had to keep that very, very much ourselves. So he took the pseudonym of Ed Armstrong. Anyway, he calls me up and he says, "Good God!" He said, "Were you listening to the program last night?" I said, "No, I went to bed at the usual hour." I didn't. And he said, "They were talking about burning down Venice High School." And he said, "God, if I'd known anything like this, you realize what?" And I said, "Hey, come on, Ed." I said, "Come on. What, I mean, I said a number of things. I said, this is a First Amendment station." I said, and he said, "Well, I know, but this, you could have." I said, "I don't think I could." I said, "I think if somebody goes out and actually burns it down, I think maybe they could have some problems." But I said, "I don't see how I could have any problems. I'm for people saying what they believe." I said, "First of all, the importance of having a First Amendment station, I think this is really important, is that when people are saying things, no matter how outrageous you think they are or how wrong or whatever, isn't it better to have that thing, to hear what they're saying? What are they saying when they're saying, 'Let's burn down the high school'? Aren't they saying, 'We're damn dissatisfied with what's going on, and you know, and you better pay attention, because one day you're going to walk by there and find that place a cinder heap, right? And especially you are if you repress it. If they needed our station to be able to express this, if nobody was listening, then I would say that the danger of seeing Venice High School burned down one day was rather strong."
And for the record, I'm not aware that Venice High School ever did burn down.
No, I don't think so. For the record, it didn't burn down. And for the record, I want to say that I'm not in favor of burning down schools.
And for the record, I'm going to say perhaps it should have burned down, but I don't know much about Venice High School.
Well, I think I know. What I know is that I know to trust the victims, and I know to trust the kids. And I didn't hear the program. All I know about it was that's what they said. I say, if that's what they said, they're right.
Now, you didn't have commercial sponsors on the station.
No, we certainly didn't.
Were they barred, or were they simply didn't show up? Or?
Well, then nobody asked. I have to say that we were not very effective. You know, one of the things that characterizes me is a rather merciless attitude toward whatever work we do. I mean, merciless in the sense that I want to be effective. The only reason that I'm doing radio is because I'm scared shitless about what's happening in this country and what's happening all over the world. I'm 66 years old. I am not looking for a career in radio at my age, and wasn't in 1991 either. And I'm doing it because it seems to me of the utmost importance, basically, to life. To life, to freedom, to everything that this country is supposed to stand for and doesn't, and so I forget what I was.
No, I think you make your point quite eloquently. We're talking, by the way, to Tom Reveille, who's not only worked with, was one of the founders of Free Radio Venice in its seven eight month run down in Venice in 1991. But who's also interested here in Free Radio Santa Cruz, and maybe on the air in the future with his own show. He's concerned about fundamental political change. And before we get into that, which I think is the main reason you want to be here today, is to talk about that. But let's conclude what did happen to your radio station in Venice, and what were the consequences?
Well, that's again. I don't want to. They busted me once, sort of a warning bust. They came. They arrived one day when my friend Swami was on the station reading his poetry, and I'd just gone upstairs to get
ex Swami ex, dude.
Well, do you? I don't know. I don't know whether he.
Lots of talk about cunts and he was mostly in Berkeley, but he was big on. He would say he would have rallies on the steps of UCSC during UCB on the 70s.
William Hart, something like was that his name? Big, tall guy, deep voice, and rather cavernous looking. Anyway, he was quite amusing. He also used to do things on the boardwalk and so on. I do mean that. I do mean him.
We're talking about the same as X Swami X, but go ahead.
If it was Harry. Something Hart, which I've just remembered from, he was sued by the FCC because he was the only other person. Poor devil. I mean, he wasn't on that often, but I mean, he was the only other person. And I got him out of the case. I said basically, it's all my responsibility. Anybody who's involved in the station, I said to everybody, listen, it's all being done on my responsibility because I'm the one that has studied the law in this matter, and I take full responsibility if. If this is against the law, then I want it to be on me because everyone else is just trusting my word for it. So they did name him originally in the suit. But anyway, they came. When I came downstairs, here were these cops. And they eventually put me in irons. they handcuffed me. And they kept saying, don't get so upset, don't get so upset. And I said, if you don't want me to be upset, I said, get the hell off my property. Stop violating my rights. And so then they put me in handcuffs. They took them off and eventually left. But they left with me a sort of a warning, a notice and warning that I was breaking the law and so on. And I had never actually researched the FCC rules that they were supposed to be applying in this case. But when they actually, because I thought, whatever they are, they're unconstitutional. I know what the Constitution says, and if these don't go well. But when they actually brought it and left it there with me, and it was on the other side, the statutes that I was supposed to be violating. So I read them, and I said, this is interesting. There isn't anything here that I'm violating. First of all, they completely constitutionally define the FCC as something that has authority in interstate and foreign commerce. In other words, interstate and foreign radio transmissions, right? And later in the course of my correspondence with them, which is completely legal, right? What does that mean? It means that for a station like Radio Santa Cruz or Radio Free Venice, they have no jurisdiction whatever.
Well, I think more recently the claims have been, I am not familiar with the section that they've been trying to close down I guess Free Radio Berkeley is the station that has been really leading the charge in the last 3 or 4 years on this issue. And as listeners may know, Judge Claudia Wilkin of federal court up there has essentially told the FCC that if they want to close us down, or any free radio station, Berkeley specifically, they have to have a provision for dealing with micro-broadcasting stations. I guess the claim they had in our station and in micro-stations generally was that you had to have at least 100 watts of broadcasting power. And I'm not sure what FCC regulation that is, but I think that was one of the claims they had.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I think it is one of the claims. No, the thing is that their claims are completely bogus. You know, the real purpose of the statutes is to keep poor people off the air, because at present, to go through the licensing process is $50,000 to $100,000 just to go through that licensing process. What does that mean? If you can go on the air for less than $1,000, you can afford to tell people the truth. If you go on the air for $100,000, you've got an investment. It would be the same thing with me, with anybody. I have an investment. I need a return on my investment. I'm no longer free to tell the truth. I need something that will make me a profit. Since when has the truth made a profit? Since Socrates, the truth has never made a profit. Especially not when the truth is that we got to get rid of the profit system. We got to get rid of capitalism. You're not going to get a free ride on the capitalist airwaves until you make them yours. You're not going to get a free ride on the airwaves so that we can tell each other how to bust the system. It just isn't going to happen. And that means even this thing about calling up talk shows, which Travis T. Hipp has recommended to a number of people and so on, which I know that just doesn't happen. You call talk shows, they cut you off. Any time that you threaten, we have to be able to be free to strategize, to make strategy and tactics. This is about my show, the reason that I want to do it so badly is that it's aimed at action. It is not going to be the traditional show, the traditional show at a station like this, to my knowledge, talks about all these dreadful things that are happening. It doesn't talk about what do we do about it, because frankly, people are pretty darn baffled by what to do about it. I mean, there's a darn good reason for that. We're disempowered. But I have some ideas, as I say, and strong ideas about how to begin to take the movement back. And just in order not to keep anybody in suspense, I think that I've recently, very recently, come to the conclusion that probably the secret is the grand jury. That we've got to take back. At present, the situation is that the California Constitution says about the grand jury one thing. It says, a grand jury shall be chosen in every county every year. That's it. That's the only thing about the grand jury. If we can't get an initiative, now if we can get an initiative saying, defining who's going to do the choosing, because at present, the jury is chosen by the very people that they're supposed to ride herd on. The judges, the DA, the law enforcement, the judicial system. So that cannot be. At present, I've had some dealings with various grand juries in various counties and so on. They're all a bunch of scared rabbits. And we've got to get a situation where the people, because the grand jury is our only institutional way of reigning in government when it commits crimes. And our government is a criminal government. It's as simple as that.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. We're going to be going till 1:30 this afternoon on Sunday, March 15th. And in the studio is Tom Reveille, who's a freedom fighter, radio broadcaster in Venice in the early 90s, and perhaps soon to be a radio broadcaster here in Santa Cruz, looking for a way to turn free radio into a tool for immediate change. Before you go into that, I know that's what you do want to go into. You want to conclude what happened down there in Venice. Give us the sad or exciting conclusion, or what went on. In fact, and do you know, has there been a replacement station that's developed?
To my knowledge, no. What happened was that after I read this, I was really, and this was, they gave me the warning bust in May, I believe it was, the end of May, and we had gone on in the middle of April. But after that, I said, you're on your own rules, and so on. I wrote to Zulek, who was that was the name of the local enforcer, and I said, you're out of your depth, brother. I mean, they were down to, you know how they defended their actions, their jurisdiction? They said, radio waves never die, and as a result, we have jurisdiction over tiny little radio station, 5-watt radio stations in Venice or Santa Cruz and so on. Can you imagine that? In other words, they were basing their jurisdiction on inaudible sounds. I actually heard the guy say it in a TV interview, because we were both interviewed on TV at the time.
So the FCC in Washington claims jurisdiction over a small station in Venice, California, which can't be heard out of state because supposedly, theoretically, the radio waves reach other states?
the waves never die. So in other words, I said in that case they've got jurisdiction over a fart on Pluto, because sound waves never die. I mean, it's all on. I mean, it's absolutely absurd. But that's what they're reduced to, because there's no way that they can justify. Anyway, I thought I had them licked. I mean, because not only the Constitution, but even their own rules and so. And so I wrote to their big boss, a guy called Richard Smith in Washington, and at the time, I don't know if he's still there, and I thought that they were licked. I mean, they kind of didn't. Oh, Smith said to me, don't trust that interstate and foreign thing, because he said they've amended. By the way, what I got was the Communications Act as amended. But apparently they amended it a dozen times, and on at least one occasion, at least this is the claim. I have no idea whether it's true, because these guys lie like...
Governments lie? What are you talking about?
But I mean, about everything, same as cops. I mean, they're just another brand of cop, and they all lie. It's the law, right? And, what's his name? Smith said that they had taken out the phrase interstate and foreign in before the thing, so that they gave them jurisdiction over all radio transmissions. And my answer to that was, if Congress did that, they have no power to do that. They don't have the power. We didn't give it to them. Congress cannot make that, just the way they can't wake up some morning and say, the heck with all these state police departments, we're going to run everything from Washington. They can't do that constitutionally. They do that, and they do things very much like that, but and worse than that. But it is unconstitutional. At the time, I still believed that there were judges here and there scattered around the system that would, like Claudia Wilkins, who, as far as I know, is the shining exception to everybody that I've encountered. Anyway, they marched in on the November, whenever it was, November 13th. And I came down. I heard these noises downstairs, and it was dark downstairs. And we had, and basically there was nobody in the. It was a taped program was on, and these guys came in, and they were not in uniform. They were federal marshals this time, because I had objected to the fact that they used L.A. police the first time. I said, where the hell does the FCC get jurisdiction to use L.A. police, use our local tax dollars to come and commit their crimes? So this time they brought federal marshals. They said, you know, you Tom Reveille and so on. I asked for their identification. They didn't show me. They dangled something way out here in the dark. It was dark downstairs because there were no lights on, except a little pilot light sort of in the studio. And they ordered me to sit down. Then another roommate, an Alaskan housemate, came down from the third floor, and with her they drew a gun. I guess they weren't expecting anybody else, and so she came down in her bathrobe to find out what the commotion was. And anyway, they held me downstairs. They could have dismantled the entire station. It would have taken them 10 minutes, a little longer if they went to get the antenna, which they didn't go get, and so on. They could have made it impossible for me to broadcast. Instead, they went up into my bedroom, and they took 15 years of my life. They ransacked the bedrooms of four people. They went into the bedroom and kind of looked around and so on. Three of them had nothing to do with the radio station. The fourth was mine, and they took anything they pleased. This guy had written himself a completely illegal warrant saying, including but not limited to, that he was to search for and seize things, including but not limited to radio equipment and stuff. Not limited to means anything, and that's exactly what he took. He took files. He took my diary, which was really important, because it had the names of everybody that I'd met, everybody that that year, and so on in the radio thing. And basically, they ruined me. And then when they brought the case against me and I made the counterclaim, what they did was to shift the thing off the First Amendment, which I was very prepared to argue. I mean, I was knew it backwards. I knew the whole, you know, the law surrounding it backwards and forwards, but to a matter of search and seizure. I mean, I said, you know, I faced five federal judges. I took it to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and before I got exhausted, couldn't find any attorney to help me. No attorney would support me at the time. That's one thing Dunifer has, that's, you know, Steve Dunifer in Berkeley.
Steve Dunifer is the one who's taking the Free Radio Berkeley appealed and took it successfully to Claudia Wilkin, and is still kind of in the forefront and has been interviewed by the New York Times. And he's an old Berkeley activist from way back who is doing a good job with that radio.
But he's also very lucky, because he had a couple of National Lawyers Guild, excellent lawyers who, there's a whole task force that is devoted to this, and I forget the name of the two guys, one particularly whose brief I read, and so anyway, the point is
Peter Frank, I think, is one of them.
Peter Frank, but it's the other one I think that's done the brief and so on. That's right, Peter Frank is familiar. The point is, he was lucky and I wasn't, but I met him, in fact, at the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, where I met also the attorneys and so on. And I could not get, facing five federal judges with my demand and so on, to get them to admit that there was a difference between radio equipment and what they in fact took, which included $800, by the way, in cash, which I happen to have among my papers and so on, which they may not even... I don't know why I have to be this fair about it. I never got it back and so on, but certainly at the time I was saying they might not even have known. If they just grabbed files, they might not even have known, because it was kind of stuffed in, hidden.
Did you ever get any of that stuff back?
Never any of it. I couldn't even get the court to admit, because they realized that if they admitted that kind of illegality, I believe on any point, it would have been the ball game. If they had said, listen, you violated this guy's rights, the first question to ask is why, if you're enforcing the law, why do you need to violate the rights? Go in there, take the radio equipment, prevent him from broadcasting. But why did they have to take all my videotapes, audio tapes, papers, and so on, in my bedroom? This wasn't the radio station. This was the bedroom. And then they didn't take the antenna. Why? Because there was a lot of trouble, and maybe a little dangerous to get up there on the roof and take the antenna.
So it sounds like they were engaging in the kind of punitive behavior that was designed to repress you and deter you from any kind of future broadcasting activity. And did it have that effect?
Well, no, it didn't. as you can see, no, I've been trying desperately ever since to get back on the. But it was a blow. But the main blow, I think, is realizing that we're out here. That there is so. I mean, at the time, don't forget, I didn't know about Claudia Wilkins, who was one of my heroes. I mean, I haven't yet had a chance to write her my only fan letter to a judge, but. But I did intend to, and you see, it's on the existence of of judges like that, that we, you know, that we have to base our hope. The idea, that the whole kind of patriot and constitutionist idea is that you're going to lose at the local level. You're going to lose because it's an old boy, it's an old boy situation, and they're just, you know, they're all going to hang together, and that certainly is true in Santa Cruz, and it certainly was true in Mendocino and Ukiah when I was there, and it was true in the Venice area. But the idea is that as you move on up the ladder and get more and more separated, more divorced from the actual local gang, that you do have a chance of encountering it. I think, I don't know. I just don't know anymore whether that's true or not. As I say, Claudia Wilkins has come to, but my experience is that there isn't a single judge anywhere. I mean, I've just gotten my second defeat in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and this one I believe I'm going to try and take to the Supreme Court. And I'm just going to say to the Supreme Court, I got to know, fellas, I got to know if even in the highest court in the land, if there's any regard for law at all. Because, go ahead.
Well, don't hold your breath there, Tom. Was this defeat around a radio issue, or was it another issue?
Well, it's cable television. It's about the taxing of our rights, which of course is being a right by definition cannot be taxed. A right is defined as a power of free action and cannot be taxed. Now the cable company, you know, violates our rights and taxes them three different ways. One is a direct tax laid by the city and county of Santa Cruz unconstitutionally on our right to receive information through television. That's one thing. The other two are two so-called pass-through taxes, which are levied on the profits of TCI, but which TCI passes through to us as a condition of our being able to receive cable television, which, as you know, in Santa Cruz means not just cable, but television, period, because you can't get PBS without cable.
Yeah, TCI, of course, is one of the two cable companies here in Santa Cruz?
I think it's the only one. It's a monopoly. I don't believe there's another one. No, it's a monopoly. It's a total monopoly situation, so that they're cutting off your whole access to information and entertainment and all the ideas and information through television if you refuse to pay these illegal taxes.
Well, let's turn from that issue back again to the one that brought you to the studio today. And we're again talking to Tom Reveille, radio pirate and grand old man of the airwaves from Venice, California. Tell us more about this show that you'd like to see on there. Of course, you'd need a phone line return to the state studio, and we're all looking for that interactive phone line. What kind of public discussion would you have around what issues?
Wow. Well, you were at the meeting, Bob, the fluoridation issue, the homeless issue, another of your, if not your main focus, as far as I'm aware. Action here is the fluoridation and, hemp. Hemp, the issue of the medical marijuana, which I happen to think is a bit of a cop-out. It's better than nothing, but it's a bit of a cop-out, because I don't think they have any business regulating any use of any... I don't think that the no victimless crime is constitutionally valid. There is no such thing. In one of my favorite sentences of all time, and one of the great sentences to do with government, which you will hear me repeat if I have the good fortune to join the station, is Thomas Jefferson's great line, "The legitimate powers of government extend to such acts only as are injurious to others." In other words, the only legitimate power of government is to defend and protect and preserve the common law, which is do no injury. As long as you do no injury to anyone, defined in a relatively wide manner, of course, but as long as you do no injury to anyone else, anything between consenting adults is permitted, and the law has, and the law and the government have absolutely nothing to do with it. And so, obviously, our ability to talk to each other on the air, provided we don't trespass on previously established contracts and property and so on, for the government to interfere with this, brands it as an unconstitutional criminal government.
So, let's give an example. Let's suppose you were doing the show, and I was calling in. Let's imagine you're doing your first show here on the air.
Okay.
I'm turning over the mic to you for the moment. You're now on the air doing your show, and we'll act as though I'm the phone voice coming in. Show me the kind of process that you think would be helpful, and how you'd be seeking to involve the community, not merely in "woe is me, gosh, all these bad things are happening," but here we are finding solutions to these problems.
Okay, you're much more. You want a little further away. Okay. I know that you're much more involved with local action and so on than I have been, for various reasons. So the shape of the show would be the following. Either I would introduce, or someone calling in would introduce a problem. Any problem? I mean, in other words, before you called in, we would talk about let's talk about the homeless problem. Let's talk about something that you and I have talked about before, and I don't think it's made very much impression on the fact. Why they say the unconstitutional sleeping ban? Okay. Well, now there is no ban against sleeping. It works that way, but there is no ban, and in fact, any ban on sleeping would be unconstitutional. What is the ban on?
Well, the city ordinance.
Yes. What's the city ordinance?
Makes it illegal to camp, where camping is defined as sleeping after 11 o'clock at night outside, in any public area or vehicle, and on much private property too,
right,
in the city limits.
Precisely. Okay. So now, if you look up camping, the legal definition of camping is found in the insurance code. What does that mean? It means that camping is not defined as sleeping. Sleeping is a right, right? Which you have under your right, your unalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So sleeping is a right, and to ban sleeping would be unconstitutional. Camping is not a right. Camping is like having a corporation or something. You have to go to the state. You have to say, I want permission to camp and such and such and such. The state can deny it. It has full discretion, since it grants you the privilege. It's a privilege, like driving, remember? And so if the state can grant you a privilege, if you ask for permission to do something, the state can then say no. Now, you don't have to ask permission to the state to sleep. However, the trick is that if you look at this at the ordinance, as Bob has said, the ordinance says camping shall mean sleeping. Wrong. A lie. Only when you go to court, if you don't point out that lie, if you don't find a way to legally point out the lie, and you say the camping ordinance, you say to the judge, the camping ordinance is unconstitutional, without pointing out that they've defined, that's where the unconstitutionality is that they've defined camping as something that isn't camping, just the way driving has a different meaning in the law from what the common meaning is. If you don't point that out, the judge is going to say, the judge will simply say, no, it's not unconstitutional. It's perfectly constitutional for the state to regulate camping wherever they want.
Yeah, but Tom, I ain't got no money for a lawyer, and, I've got a lot of time. I just want to be able to sleep at night. I mean, everybody's tried. These people all did their protests in front of City Hall, 2 years ago, and they went to a judge, and the attorney said, hey, you can't, sleeping is a constitutional right. And the judge said, well, you can sleep during the day. You don't have to sleep during the night.
Did the judge actually say that?
Yeah.
That's like the great French judge, where the man stole a loaf of bread in the 17th century or something like that. And the judge was, and he said, why did you steal a loaf of bread? And he said, a man must eat. And the judge said, I don't see the necessity.
Wow. So that's the kind of colloquy you'd be having on the air with folks?
No, we'd go a little further than that. Hopefully we'd go a little further than that. No, the answer, again, as you know, because we've had some colloquy on this before, Bob, what we have to do, again, this gets back to the grand jury. We have to have the people who, it's fine. I don't want anybody to become an attorney. I don't want anybody to, and I don't want anybody, and nobody has to do the kind of research that I've done on this one case in the statute. But what you do have to do is, and that's why I passed out those little books and remember the little books and pens that I passed out of you, was just to find out any time that these crimes are taken, you have to be aware that the police are breaking the law. That every time that a policeman violates your rights, your police officer, excuse me, violates your rights, they are breaking the law. So then all you have to do is get down the names of the people involved, the name, the place, and so on. You get down the witnesses, the evidence, and so on. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's actually something we've urged here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and previous to that, working with groups like SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, and HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, two groups concerned with the rights of, well, the whole community, but particularly low-income people, to get the who is giving you the bad ticket or the hassle, who are the witnesses, what time did it happen, where did it happen, what are the specifics, and get that information down in documented fashion. I think that's, of course, always good advice, no question about it. I got to warn you, we're running out of time, so if you want to kind of briefly sum up the kind of... Anything more you want to say about
summing
this?
Up except to say that the idea is that we entrap the criminals. And there's plenty against the police entrapping us out here, but there's nothing against entrapping the police. So what you do is you start building the case. And if people start getting that in their minds and so on. Now, that doesn't mean if we collect 20 cases, there may be one, two, three, I don't know, but just a couple out of those cases. But all we need is one good one. Don't forget the great saying of Archilochus that the fox knows many tricks and the hedgehog only one good one. That's all we need is one good one.
Right, although one would wonder if people would be more likely to engage in these kinds of discussions in kind of more private encounters rather than on the radio, though that's not always true. I know that in some cases people, when they hear a case discussed on the radio, will feel empowered and want to discuss their own case, which they feel was somehow their fault, or they'd be kind of reticent to even speak about it. When they hear someone else speak about a similar situation, they realize they're not alone and that it's a common problem throughout the community. On the other hand, there is the problem that some people are understandably afraid of the police department, and they don't want to talk about it in a public forum until they've got all their I's dotted and their T's crossed, if you know what I mean.
Well, we've got to get past fear. There's no doubt about that. We've got to get past fear, and we've got to get past discussion. This is not about discussion. This is about what do we do about it. That's the difference between my show, as I say, which is hopefully going to be called, it is called Surviving the System. It's about how to survive the system. How the devil do we do it? And obviously, there is going to be fear. We have to deal with that at every point. But if one of the ways to overcome it is by creating community. And the great instrument for creating community is radio, micro radio.
Well, if you're interested in Tom's show, I encourage you to either give me or him a call. Would you like your number put out, Tom?
Absolutely, fine.
You can give Tom a call and tell him that you'd like to, you know, kind of brainstorm with him on how to help out with this, or, you know, possibly give him some thoughts of your own. His number is...
Well, I hope you'll be doing that on the air, frankly. I mean, I'm not sure what I can do until this matter of whether we have a station and whether we have a phone, especially a call-in phone, is settled. But my number is, for anyone who wants it, needs it, 408-454-9392.
Yes, sir. 954-9392 to contact Tom Reveille. Or if you have any more general comments about the show, want to speak to me about any issue around Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, that's the show you're listening to here on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, you can call me at 423-HUFF, 423-H-U-F-F, or in numbers, that's 423-4833, and leave a message of any length if you're critical of the show, if you have some thoughts about what should have been said but hasn't been said, if you want to tell me what a great show you think it is, if you want to give me new information, just leave that information on my line, and I will I'll pass it on at the next show. Quite candidly, we haven't had too much in-calling stuff coming in, so like to get more from the audience out there. I'm usually, as Thomas pointed out, it's a really important interactive process when you have a phone line on, and when you don't have a phone line going live to the studio, as we don't have now, we need that kind of input somehow, somewhere. If you have more general comments to make about Free Radio Santa Cruz, or inquiries, or donations, or concerns, you can contact Free Radio Santa Cruz at its own voicemail, which is 427-4523. That's 427-4523. And if you have email and want to get us information at Free Radio, it's frsc@cruzio.com. frsc@cruzio.com. Or snail mail, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 75061. That's, I'm sorry, 95061. Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. So we're looking for public service announcements. If you got something you want on the air, loop tapes, hey, whatever you got, send it our way, donations. We even get the occasional experienced radio broadcaster who comes wandering into the studio like you, Tom. Listen, I want to thank you for being on the air today, and you've also brought along several tapes from your show back in the early 90s, which I'm hoping
actually after the bust, my pal Jingles came and interviewed me for hours, and this is a couple of hours of interview, which gives a very good introduction, at least to what I think about various matters.
Yeah, well, you are, of course, your voice is fine radio quality voice. I wish I had the, I suppose as I grow older, perhaps, well, I'm already pretty old, but maybe